various letters on different styles and makes of paper. That golden eye narrowed. As Tamlin's emissary, he no doubt recognized them.
"Let me guess." They say yes, but picking the location is now going to be the headache.
Moore frowned. "Any suggestions?"
Lucian tied back his hair with a strap of brown leather.
"Do you have a map?"
"I suppose that left me to retrieve Nesta."
"That pine tree wasn't there a moment ago."
Asriel let out a quiet laugh from where he sat atop a boulder 2 days later, watching me pluck pine needles out of my hair and jacket.
"Judging by its size, I'd say it's been there for 200 years at least."
I scowled, brushing off the shards of bark and my bruised pride. That coldness, that aloofness that had been there in the wake of Moore's anger and rejection, it had warmed. Either from Moore's choosing to sit next to him at dinner last night, a silent offer of forgiveness, or simply needing time to recover from it. Even if I could have sworn some kernel of guilt had flickered every time Asriel had looked at Moore. What Cassian had thought of it, of his own anger towards Asriel. He'd been all smiles and lewd comments. Glad all was back to normal. For now, at least. My cheeks burned as I scaled the boulder he perched on, the drop at least 15 feet to the forest floor below, the lake a sparkling sprawl peeking through the pine trees, including the tree I'd collided with, face first, on my latest attempt to leap off the boulder and simply sail to the lake. I braced my hands on my hips, examining the drop, the trees, the lake beyond. What did I do wrong? Asriel, who had been sharpening Truth Teller in his lap, flicked his hazel eyes up to me.
"Aside from the tree?"
The Shadow Singer had a sense of humor. Dry and quiet, but alone, together, it came out far more often than it did amongst our group. I'd spent these past 2 days either poring over ancient volumes for any hint on repairing the wall to hand over to Amarin and Nesta, who continued to silently, invisibly build and mend walls within their minds, or debating with Rhys and the others about how to reply to the volley of letters now being exchanged with the other High Lords regarding where the meeting would take place. Lucian had indeed given us an initial location, and several more when those were struck down. But that was to be expected, Lucian had said, as if he'd arranged such things countless times. Rhys had only nodded in agreement. And approval. And when I wasn't doing that, I was combing through more books. Any and all Clotho could find me, all regarding the Ouroboros. How to master it. The mirror was notorious. Every known philosopher had ruminated on it. Some had dared face it and gone mad. Some had approached and run away in terror. I couldn't find an account of anyone who had mastered it. Faced what lurked within and walked away with the mirror in their possession. Save for the weaver in the wood, who certainly seemed insane enough, perhaps thanks to the mirror she'd so dearly loved. Or perhaps whatever evil lurked in her had tainted the mirror, too. Some of the philosophers had suggested as much, though they hadn't known her name, only that a dark queen had once possessed it, cherished it, spied on the world with it, and used it to hunt down beautiful young maidens to keep her eternally young. I supposed Kier's family owning the Ouroboros for millennia suggested the success rate of walking away was low. It was not heartening. Not when all the texts agreed on one thing. There was no way around it. No loophole. Facing the terror within, that was the only route to claim it. Which meant I perhaps had to consider alternatives. Other ways to entice the bone carver to join us. When I found a moment. Asriel sheathed his legendary fighting knife and examined the wings I'd spread wide.
"You're trying to steer with your arms. The muscles are in the wings themselves. And in your back. Your arms are unnecessary. They're more for balancing than anything. And even that's mostly a mental comfort."
It was more words than I'd ever
heard from him. He lifted a brow at my gaping, and I shut my mouth. I frowned at the drop ahead.
Again?
I grumbled. A soft laugh. We can find a lower ledge to jump from, if you want. I cringed.
You said this was low.
Asriel leaned back on his hands and waited. Patient, cool. But I felt the bark tear into my palms, the thud of my knees into its rough side.
You are immortal, he said quietly. You are very hard to break.
A pause.
That's what I told myself.
Hard to break, I said glumly. But it still hurts.
Tell that to the tree.
I have to laugh. I know the drop isn't far, and I know it won't kill me. Can you just, push me? For it was that initial leap of utter faith, that initial lurch into motion that had my limbs locking up.
No.
A simple answer. I still hesitated. Useless, this fear. I had faced down the Ator, falling through the sky for 1,000 feet. And the rage at its memory, at what it had done with its miserable life, what more like it might do again, had me gritting my teeth and sprinting off the boulder. I snapped my wings out wide, my back protesting as they caught the wind, but my lower half began to drop, my legs a dead weight as my core yielded. The infernal tree rose up before me, and I swerved hard to the right. Right into another tree. Wings first. The sound of bone and sinew on wood, then earth, hit me before the pain did. So did Asriel's soft curse. A small noise came out of me. The stinging of my palms registered first, then in my knees, then my back. Shit, was all I could say as Asriel knelt before me.
You're all right. Just stunned.
The world was still reordering itself.
You banked well, he offered.
Into another tree?
Being aware of your surroundings is half of flying.
You said that already, I snapped. He had, 12 times just this morning. Asriel only sat on his heels and offered me a hand up. My flesh burned as I gripped his fingers, a mortifying number of pine needles and splinters tumbling off me. My back throbbed enough that I lowered my wings, not caring if they dragged in the dirt, as Asriel led me toward the lake edge. In the blinding sun of the turquoise water, his shadows were gone, his face stark and clear. More human than I'd ever seen him.
There's no chance that I'll be able to fly in the legions, is there?
I asked, kneeling beside him as he tended to my skinned palms with expert care and gentleness. The sun was brutal against his scars, hiding not one twisted, rippling splotch.
Likely not, he said.
My chest hollowed out at that.
But it doesn't hurt to practice until the last possible moment. You never know when any measure of training may be useful.
I winced as he fished out a large splinter from my palm, then washed it clean.
It was very hard for me to learn how to fly, he said. I didn't dare respond. Most Illyrians learn as toddlers, but I assume Rhysand told you the particulars of my early childhood.
I nodded. He finished the one hand and started on the other.
Because I was so old, I had a fear of flying, and did not trust my instincts. It was an embarrassment to be taught so late, not just to me, but to all in the war camp once I arrived. But I learned, often going off by myself. Cassian, of course, found me first, mocked me, beat me to hell, then offered to train me. Rhys was there the next day. They taught me to fly.
He finished my other hand and sat on the shore, the stones murmuring as they shifted beneath him. I sat beside him, bracing my sore palms face up on my knees, letting my wings sag behind me. Because it was such an effort. A few years after the war, Reese brought me back a story. It was a gift, the story, for me. He went to see Miriam and Draken in their new home. The visit so secret, even we hadn't known it was happening until he returned. We knew their people hadn't drowned in the sea, as everyone believed, as they wanted people to believe. You see, when Miriam freed her people from the Queen of the Black Land, she led all of them, nearly 50,000 of them, across the desert, all the way to the shores of the Erythian Sea, Draken's aerial legion providing cover. But they got to the sea and found the ships they'd arranged to transport them over the narrow channel to the next kingdom had been destroyed. Destroyed by the Queen herself, who sent her lingering armies to drag her former slaves back. Draken's people, the Seraphim, are winged, like us. But their wings are feathered. And unlike us, their army and society allow women to lead, to fight, to rule. All of them are gifted with mighty magic of wind and air. And when they beheld that army charging after them, they knew their own force was too small to face them. So they cleaved the sea itself, made a path through the water, all the way through the channel, and ordered the humans to run. They did. But Miriam insisted on remaining behind until every last one of her people had crossed. Not one human would she leave behind, not one. They were about halfway through the crossing when the army reached them. The Seraphim were spent. Their magic could barely hold the sea passage. And Draken knew that if they held it any longer, that army would make it across and butcher the humans on the other side. The Seraphim fought off the vanguard on the floor of the sea, and it was bloody and brutal and chaotic. And during the melee, they didn't see Miriam skewered by the Queen herself. Draken didn't see. He thought she made it out, carried by one of his soldiers. He ordered the parted sea to come down, to drown the enemy force. But a young Seraphim cartographer named Nefel saw Miriam go down. Nefel's lover was one of Draken's generals, and it was she who realized Miriam and Nefel were missing. Draken was frantic, but their magic was spent, and no force in the world could hold back the sea as it barreled down, and no one could reach his mate in time. But Nefel did. Nefel, you see, was a cartographer because she'd been rejected from the Legion's fighting ranks. Her wings were too small, the right one somewhat malformed, and she was slight, short enough that she'd been a dangerous gap in the front lines when they fought shield to shield. Draken had let her try out for the Legion as a courtesy to her lover, but Nefel failed. She could barely carry the Seraphim shield, and her smaller wings hadn't been strong enough to keep up with the others. So, she had made herself invaluable as a cartographer during the war, helping Draken and her lover find the geographical advantages in their battles, and she became Miriam's dearest friend during those long months as well. And on that day, on the seafloor, Nefel remembered that her friend had been in the back of the line. She returned for her, even as all others fled for the distant shore. She found Miriam skewered on the Queen's spear, bleeding out. The seawall started to come down on the opposite shore, killing the approaching army first, racing toward them. Miriam told Nefel to save herself, but Nefel would not abandon her friend. She picked her up and flew. Azriel's voice was soft with awe. When Reese spoke to Draken about it years later, he still didn't have words to describe what happened. It defied all logic, all training. Nefel, who had never been strong enough to hold a seraphim shield, carried Miriam, triple the weight. And more than that, she flew. The sea was crashing down upon them, but Nefel flew like the best of seraphim warriors. The seafloor was a labyrinth of jagged rocks, too narrow for the seraphim to fly through. They'd tried during their escape and crashed into them. But Nefel, with her smaller wings, had they been 1 inch wider, she would not have fit. And more than that, Nefel soared through them, Miriam dying in her arms, as fast and skilled as the greatest of seraphim. Nefel, who had been passed over, who had been forgotten, she outraced death itself. There was not a foot of room between her and the water on either side of her when she shot up from the seafloor, not half of that rising up at her feet. And yet her too small wingspan, that deformed wing, they did not fail her. Not once. Not for one wing beat. My eyes burned. She made it. Suffice to say, her lover made Nefel her wife that night. And Miriam, well, she is alive today because of Nefel. Azrael picked up a flat white stone and turned it over in his hands. Rhys told me the story when he returned. And since then we have privately adapted the Nefel philosophy with our own armies. I raised a brow. Azrael shrugged. We, Rhys, Cass, and I, will occasionally remind each other that what we think to be our greatest weakness can sometimes be our biggest strength, and that the most unlikely person can alter the course of history. The Nefel philosophy. He nodded. Apparently, every year in their kingdom, they have the Nefel run to honor her flight. On dry land, but she and her wife crown a new victor every year in commemoration of what happened that day. He chucked the stone back amongst its brethren on the shore, the sound clattering over the water.
So we'll train, Feyre, until the last possible day. Because we never know if just one extra hour will make the difference.
I weighed his words. Nefel's story. I rose to my feet and spread my wings. Then, let's try again. I groaned as I limped into our bedroom that night to find Rhys sitting at the desk, poring over more books.
I warned you that Azrael's a hard bastard, he said without looking at me.
He lifted a hand, and water gurgled in the adjacent bathing room. I grumbled a thank you and trudged toward it, gritting my teeth against the agony in my back, my thighs, my bones. Every part hurt, and since the muscles needed to reform around the wings, I had to carry them, too. Their scraping along the wood and carpet, then wood again, was the only sound beyond my weary feet. I beheld the steaming bath that would require some balancing to get into, and whimpered. Even removing my clothes would entail using muscles that had nearly given out. A chair scraped in the bedroom, followed by cat soft feet. Then,
I'm sure you already know this, but you need to actually climb into a bath to get clean, not stare at it.
I didn't have the strength to even glare at him. And I managed all of one stumbling, stiff step toward the water when he caught me. My clothes vanished, presumably to the laundry downstairs, and Rhys swept me into his arms, lowering my naked body into the water. With the wings, the fit was tight, and I groaned from deep in my throat at the glorious heat. And didn't bother to do anything other than lean my head against the back of the tub.
I'll be right back, he said,
and left the bathroom, then the bedroom itself. By the time he returned, I only knew I'd fallen asleep, thanks to the hand he put on my shoulder.
Out,
he said, but lifted me himself, toweled me off, and led me to the bed. He lay me down belly first,
and I noted the oils and balms he'd set there, the faint odor of rosemary and something I was too tired to notice, but smelled lovely, floating to me. His hands gleamed as he applied generous amounts to his palms, and then his hands were on me. My groan was about as undignified as they came, as he kneaded the aching muscles of my back. The sorer areas drew out rather pathetic-sounding whimpers, but he rubbed them gently, until the tension was a dull ache rather than a sharp, blinding pain. And then he started on my wings. Relief and ecstasy, as muscles eased and those sensitive areas were lovingly, tauntingly grazed over. My toes curled, and just as he reached the sensitive spot that had my stomach clenching, his hands slid to my calves. He began a slow progression, higher and higher, up my thighs, teasing strokes between them that left me panting through my nose. Rising up until he got to my backside, where his massaging was equally professional and sinful, and then up, up my lower back, to my wings. His touch turned different, exploring, broad strokes and feather-light ones, arches and swirls and direct searing lines. My core heated, turning molten, and I bit down on my lip as he lightly scraped a fingernail so, so close to that inner sensitive spot. "Too bad you're so sore from training," Reese mused, making idle, lazy circles. I could only manage a garbled strand of words that were both plea and insult. He leaned in, his breath warming the space of skin between my wings. "Did I ever tell you that you have the dirtiest mouth I've ever heard?" I muttered words that only offered more proof of that claim. He chuckled and skimmed the edge of that sensitive spot right as his other hand slid between my legs. Brazenly, I lifted my hips in silent demand, but he just circled with a finger, as lazy as the strokes along my wing. He kissed my spine.
"How shall I make love to you tonight, Feyre, darling?"
I writhed, rubbing against the folds of the blankets beneath me, desperate for any sort of friction as he dangled me over that edge.
"So impatient," he purred,
and that finger glided into me. I moaned, the sensation too much, too consuming, with his hand between my legs and the other stroking closer and closer to that spot on my wing, a predator circling prey.
"Will it ever stop?"
he mused, more to himself than me, as another finger joined the one sliding in and out of me with taunting, indolent strokes.
"Wanting you? Every hour, every breath? I don't think I can stand 1,000 years of this."
My hips moved with him, driving him deeper.
"Think of how my productivity will plummet."
I growled something at him that was likely not very romantic, and he chuckled, slipping out both fingers. I made a little whining noise of protest, until his mouth replaced where his fingers had been, his hands gripping my hips to raise me up, to lend him better access as he feasted on me. I groaned, the sound muffled by the pillow, and he only delved deeper, taunting and teasing with every stroke. A low moan broke from me, my hips rolling. Reese's grip on them tightened, holding me still for his ministrations.
"I never got to take you in the library,"
he said, dragging his tongue right up my center.
"We'll have to remedy that."
"Reese." His name was a plea on my lips. Was all he said, a rumble of the sound against me. I panted, hands fisting in the sheets. His hands drifted from my hips at last, and I again breathed his name, in thanks and relief
and anticipation of him at last giving me what I wanted. But his mouth closed around the bundle of nerves at the apex of my thighs, while his hand, he went right to that damned spot at the inner edge of my left wing and stroked lightly. My climax tore through me with a hoarse cry, sending me soaring out of my body, and when the shuddering ripples and starlight faded, a bone-weary exhaustion settled over me, permanent and unending as the mating bond between us. Reese curled into bed behind me, tucking my wings in so he could fold against me. "That was a fun experiment," he murmured into my ear. I could feel him against my backside, hard and ready, but when I made to reach for him, Reese's arms only tightened around me.
"Sleep, Feyre," he told me.
So I laid a hand on his forearm, savoring the corded strength beneath, and nestled my head back against his chest. "I wish I had days to spend with you, like this," I managed to say as my eyelids drooped. "Just me and you."
"We will." He kissed my hair. "We will."
Chapter 30. I was still sore enough the next day that I had to send word to Cassian I wasn't training with him, or Azrael. A mistake, perhaps, given that both of them showed up at the door of the townhouse within minutes, the former demanding what the hell was wrong with me, the latter bearing a tin of salve to help with the aches in my back. I thanked Azrael for the salve and told Cassian to mind his own business, and then asked him to fly Nesta up to the House of Wind for me, since I certainly couldn't fly her in, even for a few feet after winnowing. My sister, it seemed, had found nothing in her books about repairing the wall, and since no one had yet shown her the library, I'd volunteered. Especially since Lucian had left before breakfast for a library across the city to look up anything in regard to fixing the wall, a task I'd been more than willing to hand over. I might have felt guilty for never giving him a proper tour of Alaris, but he seemed eager. More than eager. He seemed to be itching to head into the city on his own. The two Illyrians paused their inspection of me long enough to note my sister's finishing up breakfast. Nesta in a pale gray gown that brought out the steel in her eyes, Elaine in dusty pink. Both males went a bit still, but Azrael sketched a bow, while Cassian stalked for the dining table, reached right over Nesta's shoulder, and grabbed a muffin from its little basket.
"Morning, Nesta,"
he said around a mouth of blueberry lemon.
"Elaine?"
Nesta's nostrils flared, but Elaine peered up at Cassian, blinking twice. "He snapped your wings, broke your bones." I tried to shut out the sound of Cassian's scream, the memory of the spraying blood. Nesta stared at her plate. Elaine, at least, was out of her room, but...
"It'll take more than that to kill me,"
Cassian said with a smirk that didn't meet his eyes. Elaine only said to Cassian, "No, it will not." Cassian's dark brows narrowed. I dragged a hand over my face before going to Elaine and touching her too bony shoulder. "Can I set you up in the garden? The herbs you planted are coming in nicely."
"I can help her," said Azrael, stepping to the table as Elaine silently rose.
No shadows at his ear, no darkness wringing his fingers as he extended a hand. Nesta monitored him like a hawk, but kept silent as Elaine took his hand, and out they went. Cassian finished the muffin, licking his fingers. I could have sworn Nesta watched the entire thing with a sidelong glance. He grinned at her, as if he knew it too.
"Ready for some flying, Ness?"
"Don't call me that." The wrong thing to say, from the way Cassian's eyes lit up. I chose that moment to winnow to the skies above the house, chuckling as wind carried me through the world. Some sisterly payback, I supposed, for Nesta's general attitude.
Mercifully, no one saw my slightly better crash landing on the veranda. And by the time Cassian's dark figure appeared in the sky, Nesta's hair bright as bronze in the morning sun, I brushed off the dirt and dust from my leathers. My sister's face was wind-flushed as Cassian gently set her down. Then she strode for the glass doors without a single look back.
"You're welcome,"
Cassian called after her, more than a bite to his voice. His hands clenched and slackened at his sides, as if he were trying to loosen the feel of her from his palms.
"Thank you," I said to him. But Cassian didn't bother saying farewell as he launched skyward and vanished into the clouds.
The library beneath the house was shadowed, quiet. The doors opened for us, the same way they'd opened when Rhys and I had first visited. Nesta said nothing, only surveying every stack and alcove and dangling chandelier as I led her down to the level where Clotho had found those books. I showed her the small reading area where I'd been stationed, and gestured to the desk.
"I know Cassian gets under your skin, but I'm curious, too, how do you know what to look for in regard to the wall?"
Nesta ran a finger over the ancient wood desk.
"Because I just do."
"How?"
"I don't know how. Amarin told me to just see if the information clicks."
And perhaps that frightened her. Intrigued her, but frightened her. And she hadn't told Cassian, not out of spite, but because she didn't wish to reveal that vulnerability, that lack of control. I didn't push, even as I stared at her for a long moment. I didn't know how to broach that subject, how to ask if she was all right, if I could help her. I'd never been affectionate with her. I'd never held her, kissed her cheek. I didn't know where to begin. So I just said, "Rhys gave me a layout of the stacks. I think there might be more on the cauldron and wall a few levels down. You can wait here, or I'll help you look." We followed the sloping path in silence, the rustle of paper and occasional whisper of a priestess's robes along the stone floors the only sounds. I quietly explained to her who the priestesses were, why they were here. I explained that Rhys and I planned to offer sanctuary to any humans who could make it to Valaris. She said nothing. Quieter and quieter as we descended, that black pit on my right seeming to grow thicker the deeper we went. But we reached a path of stacks that veered into the mountain in a long hall, daylights flickering into life within glass globes along the wall as we passed. Nesta scanned the shelves while we walked, and I read the titles, a bit more slowly, still needing a little time to process what was instinct for my sister. "I didn't know you couldn't really read," Nesta said, as she paused before a nondescript section, noticing the way I silently sounded out the words of a title. "I didn't know where you were in your lessons. When it all happened, I assumed you could read as easily as us."
"Well, I couldn't."
"Why didn't you ask us to teach you?"
I trailed a finger over the neat row of spines.
"Because I doubted you would agree to help." Nesta stiffened like I'd hit her, coldness blooming in those eyes. She tugged a book from a shelf. "Amarin said Rhysand taught you to read." My cheeks heated.
"He did?"
And there, deep beneath the world, with only darkness for company, I asked, "Why do you push everyone away but Elaine? Why have you always pushed me away?" Some emotion guttered in her eyes. Her throat bobbed. Nesta shut her eyes for a moment, breathing in sharply.
"Because..."
The words stopped. I felt it at the same moment she did. The ripple and tremor, like some piece of the world shifted. Like some off-kilter cord had been plucked. We turned toward the illuminated path that we'd just taken through the stacks, then to the dark far, far beyond,
The phthalates along the ceiling began to sputter and die, one by one, closer and closer to us. I only had an Illyrian knife at my side. "What is that?" Nesta breathed. "Run," was all I said. I didn't give her a chance to object as I grabbed her by the elbow and sprinted into the stacks ahead. Phthalates flickered to life as we passed, only to be devoured by the dark surging for us. Slow. My sister was so damned slow with her dress, her general lack of exercising. Reese? Nothing. If the wards around the prison were thick enough to keep out communication, perhaps the same applied here. A wall approached, with a hall before it, a second slope, left rising, right plunging down. Darkness slithered down from above, but the inky gloom leading deeper, fresh and open. I went right. "Faster," I said to her. If we could lead whoever it was deep, perhaps we could cut back, right to the pit. I could winnow. Winnow. I could winnow now. I grabbed for Nesta's arm, right as the darkness behind us paused, and two high fae stepped out of it. Both male. One dark-haired, one light. Both in gray jackets embroidered with bone-white thread. I knew their coat of arms on the upper right shoulder. Knew their dead eyes. Highburn. Highburn was here. I didn't move fast enough as one of them blew out a breath toward us. As that blue Fabane dust sprayed into my eyes, my mouth, and my magic died out. Nesta's gasp told me she felt something similar. But it was on my sister that the two focused as I staggered back. Tears streaming the dust from my eyes, spitting out the Fabane. I gripped her arm, trying to winnow. Nothing. Behind them, a hooded priestess slumped to the ground.
So easy to get into their minds once our master led us through the wards, said one of them, the dark-haired male. To make them think we were scholars. We'd planned to come for you, but it seems you found us first.
All spoken to my sister. Nesta's face was near white, though her eyes showed no fear. Who are you? The white-haired one smiled broadly as they approached.
We're the king's ravens. His far-flying eyes and talons, and we've come to take you back.
The king, their master, he'd... Mother above. Was the king here? In Valaris? Reese! I slammed a mental hand into the bond over and over. Reese! Nothing. Nesta's breath began to come quickly. Swords hung at their sides, two apiece. Their shoulders were broad, arms wide enough to indicate muscle filled those fine clothes.
You're not taking her anywhere, I said, palming my knife.
How had the king done it? Arrived here unnoted. And fractured our wards. And if he was in Valaris? I shoved down my terror at the thought. At what he might be doing beyond this library, unseen and hidden.
You're an unexpected prize, too, the black-haired one said to me. But your sister?
A smile that showed all of his two white teeth.
You took something from that cauldron, girl. The king wants it back.
That was why the cauldron couldn't shatter the wall. Not because its power was spent, but because Nesta had stolen too much of it. Chapter 31 I laid my options before me. I doubted the king's ravens were stupid enough to be kept talking long enough for my powers to return. And if the king was indeed here, I had to warn everyone. Immediately. It left me with three choices. take them on in hand-to-hand combat with only a knife, when they were each armed with twin blades and were muscled enough to know how to use them, make a run for it, and try to get out of the library, and risk the lives and further trauma of the priestesses in the levels above. Or, Nesta was saying to them, if he wants what I took, he could come get it himself.
He's too busy to bother,
the white-haired male purred, advancing another step. Apparently you're not. I gripped Nesta's fingers in my free hand. She glanced at me. I need you to trust me, I tried to convey to her. Nesta read the emotion in my eyes and gave the barest dip of her chin. I said to them, you made a grave mistake coming here. To my house. They sniggered. I gave them a returning smirk as I said, and I hope it rips you into bloody ribbons. Then I ran, hauling Nesta with me, not toward the upper levels, but down, down into the eternal blackness of the pit at the heart of the library, and into the arms of whatever lurked inside it. Around and down, around and down, shelves and paper and furniture and darkness, the smell turning musty and damp, the air thickening, the darkness like dew on my skin. Nesta's breath was ragged, her skirts rustling with each sprinting step we took. Time. Only a matter of time before one of those priestesses contacted Rhys. But even a minute might be too late. There was no choice. None. Phalites stopped appearing ahead. Low, hideous laughter trickled behind us. Not so easy, is it, to find your way in the dark? Don't stop, I panted to Nesta, flinging us farther into the dark. A high-pitched scratching sounded, like talons on stone. One of the ravens crooned, do you know what happened to them? The queens? Keep going, I breathed, gripping a hand against the wall to remain rooted. Soon. We'd reach the bottom soon, and then... and then face some horror awful enough that Cassian wouldn't speak of it. The lesser of two evils. Or the worse of them. The youngest one, that pinched-faced bitch, went into the cauldron first. Practically trampled the others to get in after it saw what it did to you and your sister. Don't stop, I repeated as Nesta stumbled. If I go down, you run. That was a choice that I did not need to debate. That did not frighten me, not for a heartbeat. Stone screamed between twin sets of talons. But the cauldron, oh, it knew something had been taken from it. Not sentient, but it knew. It was furious, and when that young queen went in... The ravens laughed. Laughed as the slope leveled out and we found ourselves at the bottom of the library. Oh, it gave her immortality. It made her fey. But since something had been taken from it, the cauldron took what she valued most. Her youth. They sniggered again. A young woman went in, but a withered crone came out. And from the catacombs of my memory, Elaine's voice sounded. I saw young hands wither with age. The other queens won't go into the cauldron for terror of the same happening now. And the youngest one. Oh, you should hear how she talks, Nesta Archeron. The things she wants to do to you when Highburn is done.
Twin ravens are coming. Elaine had known, sensed it, had tried to warn us. There were ancient stacks down here, or at least I felt them as we bumped into countless hard edges in our blind sprint. Where was it? Where was it? Deeper into the dark we ran.
We're growing bored of this pursuit.
one of them said.
Our master is waiting for us to retrieve you.
I snorted loudly enough for them to hear. I'm shocked he could even muster the strength to break the wards. He seems to need a trove of magical objects to do his work for him. The other one hissed, talons scratching louder.
Whose spell book do you think Amarantha stole many decades ago? Who suggested the amusement of sticking the masks to Spring's faces as punishment? Another little spell, the one he burned through today, to crack through your wards here. Only once could it be wielded. Such a pity.
I studied the faint trickle of light I could make out, far away and high up. Run toward the light, I breathed to Nesta. I'll hold them off. No.
Don't try to be noble, if that's what you're whispering about.
One of the ravens cawed from behind.
We'll catch you both anyway.
We didn't have time, for whatever was down here to find us. We didn't have time. Run, I breathed. Please. She hesitated. Please, I begged her, my voice breaking. Nesta squeezed my hand once, and between one breath and the next, she bolted to the side, toward the center of the pit, the light high above.
What?
One of them snapped, but I struck. Every bone in my body barked in pain as I slammed into one of the stacks, then again, again, until it teetered and fell, collapsing onto the one beside it, and the next, blocking the way Nesta had gone. And any chance of my exit, too. Wood groaned and snapped, books thudded on stone. But ahead, I clawed and patted the walls as I plunged farther into the pit floor. My magic was a husk in my veins.
We'll still catch her. Don't worry.
One of them crooned.
Wouldn't want dear sisters to be separated.
Where are you? Where are you? Where are you? I didn't see the wall in front of me. My teeth sang as I collided face first. I padded blindly, feeling for a break, a corner. The wall continued on. Dead end. If it was a dead end...
Nowhere to go down here, lady,
one of them said. I kept moving, gritting my teeth, gauging the power still frozen inside me. Not even an ember to summon to light the way, to show where I was, to show any holes ahead. The terror of it had my bones locking up. No. No. Keep moving. Keep going. I reached out, desperate for a bookshelf to grab. Surely they wouldn't put a shelf near a gaping hole in the earth. Empty blackness met my fingers, slipped between them. Again and again. I stumbled a step. Leather met my fingers. Solid leather. I fumbled, the hard spines of books meeting my palms, and bit down my sob of relief. A lifeline in a violent sea. I felt my way down the stack, running now. It ended too soon. I took another blind step forward, touched my way around a corner of another stack, just as the ravens hissed with displeasure. The sound said enough. They'd lost me. For a moment. I inched along, keeping my back to a shelf, calming my heavy lungs until my breaths became near silent. Please, I breathed into the dark, barely more than a whisper. Please help me. In the distance, a boom shuddered through the ancient floor.
High Lady of the Night Court,
one of the ravens sang.
What sort of cage shall our king build for you?
Fear would get me killed. Fear would. A soft voice whispered in my ear. You are the High Lady? The voice was both young and old, hideous and beautiful. Yes, I whispered. I could sense no body heat, detect no physical presence, but I felt it behind me. Even with my back to the shelf, I felt the mass of it lurking behind me, around me like a shroud.
"We can smell you," the other raven said. "How your mate shall rage when he's found we've taken you."
"Please," I breathed to the thing crouched behind me, over me. "What shall you give me?" Such a dangerous question. Never make a bargain, Alice had once warned me before Under the Mountain. Even if the bargains I'd made, they'd saved us and brought me to Rhys. "What do you want?" one of the ravens snapped.
Who was she talking to?
"The stone and wind hear all. Speak all. They whisper to me of your desire to wield the carver, to trade."
My breath came hard and fast. "What of it?"
"I knew him once, long ago, before so many things crawled the earth."
The ravens were close, far too close when one of them hissed.
"What is she mumbling?
Does she know a spell, as the master did?" I whispered to the lurking dark behind me, "What is your price?" The raven's footsteps sounded so nearby, they couldn't have been more than 20 feet away.
"Who are you talking to?" one of them demanded.
"Company. Send me company."
I opened my mouth, but then said, "To eat?" A laugh that made my skin crawl.
"To tell me of life."
The air ahead shifted as the Highburn ravens closed in.
"There you are," one seethed.
"It's a bargain," I breathed. The skin along my left forearm tingled. The thing behind me, I could have sworn I felt it smile.
"Shall I kill them?"
"Please do." Light sputtered before me, and I blinked at the blinding ball of Faelite. I saw the twin ravens first, that Faelite at their shoulder, to illuminate me for their taking. Their attention went to me, then rose over my shoulder, my head. Absolute, unfiltered terror filled their faces, at what stood behind me.
"Close your eyes," the thing purred in my ear.
I obeyed, trembling, and all I heard was screaming. High-pitched shrieking and pleading, bones snapping, blood splattering like rain, cloth ripping and screaming, screaming, screaming. I squeezed my eyes shut so hard it hurt, squeezed them shut so hard I was shaking. Then there were warm, rough hands on me, dragging me away, and Cassian's voice at my ear saying,
"Don't look. Don't look."
I didn't. I let him lead me away, just as I felt Rhys arrive, felt him land on the floor of the pit so hard the entire mountain shuddered. I opened my eyes then, found him storming toward us, night rippling off him, such fury on his face. "Get them out." The order was given to Cassian. The screaming was still erupting behind us. I lurched toward Rhys, but he was already gone, a plume of darkness spreading from him, to shield the view of what he walked into, knowing I would look. The screaming stopped. In the terrible silence, Cassian hauled me out, toward the dim center of the pit. Nesta was standing there, arms around herself, eyes wide. Cassian only stretched out an arm for her. As if in a trance, she walked right to his side. His arms tightened around both of us, siphons flaring, gilding the darkness with blood-red light. Then we launched skyward, just as the screaming
began anew.
Chapter 32. Cassian gave us both a glass of brandy, a tall glass. Seated in an armchair in the family library high above, Nesta drank hers in one gulp. I claimed the chair across from her, took a sip, shuddered at the taste, and made to set it down on the low-lying table between us.
"Keep drinking,"
Cassian ordered. The wrath wasn't toward me. No, it was toward whatever was below, what had happened.
"Are you hurt?"
Cassian asked me. Each word was clipped, brutal. I shook my head. But he didn't ask Nesta. He must have found her first, ascertained for himself. I started, "Is the king, the city?"
"No sign of him."
A muscle twitched in his jaw. We sat in silence, until Rhys appeared between the open doors, shadows trailing in his wake. Blood coated his hands, but nothing else. So much blood, ruby bright in the mid-morning sun. Like he'd clawed through them with his bare hands. His eyes were wholly frozen with rage, but they dipped to my left arm, the sleeve filthy but still rolled up, like a slim band of black iron around my forearm, a tattoo now lay there.
"It's custom in my court for bargains to be permanently marked upon the flesh,"
Rhys had told me under the mountain.
"What did you give it?"
I hadn't heard that voice since that visit to the Court of Nightmares. It said it wanted company. Someone to tell it about life. I said yes.
"Did you volunteer yourself?"
"No." I drained the rest of the brandy at the tone, his frozen face. "It just said someone, and it didn't specify when." I grimaced at the solid black band, no thicker than the width of my finger, interrupted only by two slender gaps near the side of my forearm. I tried to stand, to go to him, to take those bloody hands, but my knees still wobbled enough that I couldn't move. "Are the king's ravens dead?"
"They nearly were when I arrived. It left enough of their minds functioning for me to have a look, and finish them when I was done."
Cassian was stone-faced, glancing between Rhys's bloody hands and his ice-cold eyes. But it was to my sister that my mate turned.
"Highburn hunts you because of what you took from the cauldron. The queens want you dead for vengeance, for robbing them of immortality."
"I know." Nesta's voice was hoarse.
"What did you take?"
"I don't know." The words were barely more than a whisper. "Even Amran can't figure it out." Rhys stared her down, but Nesta looked to me, and I could have sworn fear shone there, and guilt and some other feeling. "You told me to run." "For my sister," was all I said. She'd once tried to cross the wall to save me, but she started. "Elaine..."
"Elaine is fine,"
Rhys said.
"Asriel was at the townhouse. Lucian is headed back, and Moore is nearly there. They know of the threat."
Nesta leaned her head back against the armchair's cushion, going a bit boneless. I said to Rhys,
"Highburn infiltrated our city. Again!" "The prick held on to that fleeting spell until he really needed it."
"Fleeting spell?"
"A spell of mighty power, able to be wielded only once, to great effect. One capable of cleaving wards. He must have been biding his time."
"Are the wards here?"
"Amran is currently adapting them against such things, and will then begin combing through this city to find if the king also deposited any other cronies before he vanished."
Beneath the cold rage, there was a sharpness, honed enough that I said, "What's wrong?"
"What's wrong?"
he replied, verbally.